land deep in the Ouachita Mountains of western Arkansas, where the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, the Guerrilla Media Network presents The Reynolds Reveal, the new weekly show that, no matter the limitations that may trammel inquiry elsewhere, sifts and winnows without fear or favor. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds, and today is Tuesday, March 26, 2013. This is episode number 7 of The Reynolds Reveal. I much appreciate you for being part of the show, and yes, we do welcome your calls here at the Guerrilla Media Network. The number is 218-862-9829, and I'll repeat that number repeatedly. Last week, I think we did an important show. I had guests from the UK, England, to be more particular. We had Andrew Johnson and Richard D. Hall on the line to discuss the 7/7 terror event in London in 2005 and 9/11 2001. And we put some special emphasis on Richard's work in 3D modeling of the flight path or paths of the object or image that approached the South Tower. My guest today is Bill Anderson, and I think he is in rare company in that he is a plain-talking professor of economics in the College of Business at Frostburg State University in Western Maryland. And we're going to discuss Keynesian economics as posited by Paul Krugman and our legal system. I know the corrupt legal system we labor under as well, and lots of other things, because Bill has breadth. Lots of interesting columns he puts out at lourockwell.com. But first, let's consider a few Reynolds Reveal comments. Number one, I took a concealed carry class on Saturday outside Hot Springs, Arkansas, and sent all the paperwork and fingerprints into the state of Arkansas, the state troopers, and in some 120 days, although they're just overburdened now with applications, I'm going to be a concealed carry, a licensed concealed carry holder, and I had to pay $141.50 fee, but the class for which I paid $95, I paid $20 extra to use their firearms. I wanted to try a few different firearms, and the instruction was excellent. And I then went to the internet, and there's lots of interesting instruction videos too on shooting these handguns. And let me bring out a couple of points that this was an all-day class with a lunch break. It was a total of 6 hours of instruction. And, of course, they point out the obvious here. Is the gun the answer? Not to every problem. But I do want the option in public. Aren't we all concerned now about personal safety, and especially these multiple victim of public shootings? And they gave instruction on self-defense, non-gun, non-firearms, how to get out of a chokehold, how to use a knife, how to put a thumb in an eye socket or whack an Adam's apple, etc. The class probably had 20, and maybe 5 or 6 were women and the rest men. You got to be 21 or older to get a concealed carry license. And the aftermath, if you do shoot somebody, the consequences there, you got to be aware of. You got to be able to show clear and convincing evidence that you were in harm's way. Or if you're being a good Samaritan, you're still subject to civil suits, even if you escape criminal charges. You can't be hazy and change your story, et cetera, et cetera. And when law enforcement shows up, you better be very cooperative. And one of the interesting things was, suppose you do shoot somebody and they're bleeding out. Should you help them? And I like this answer. No. Well, there's the danger of AIDS and or hepatitis C infection, but there's also the risk of a secondary weapon being brought to bear. So you just wait for law enforcement and hold your gun on the downed bad guy. You don't know where it's going to go. Well, all sorts of interesting things in the class. And I'm going to have to buy a firearm that's appropriate for carry. So maybe you need you listeners need to give me some advice. 9mm seems to be the good. It has to be a semi-auto. You know, they're very reliable. Now, the pistol the traditional pistol used to have a reliability advantage, but apparently no longer. The Glock 19 looks interesting to me. The Beretta Nano gets a rave review. Item two. On the wretched excess front, out in California, Alameda County, I read, the administrator, one Susan Morinishi, age 63, earns, and I'm using that word loosely, earns $423,000 a year. She's a 38-year veteran of the county, and that is guaranteed income for the rest of her life. So, isn't she a fine example of going into public service to do good, and you end up doing, in this case, extremely well? Okay, and item three, on the decline of civilization front, and just in time for Holy Week, many of you have probably seen this story. We could also label it the outrage of the week. Ryan Rotella, a devout Mormon student, according to these news accounts, at Florida Atlantic University's Davie campus, was part of a class in which the professor named DeAndre Poole, who teaches an intercultural communication class from a textbook by the same name, invoked the exercise where students are supposed to write the name of Jesus in large letters on a piece of paper and then stomp on it. Well, Ryan is in this class, refuses to stomp on it, and complains to Professor Poole, telling him, never do the assignment again because it's offensive. How right, Ryan. And he told the professor he's going to complain to the university. And then, according to Rotella, the university responded by suspending him from Poole's class. I'm not sure that's really a punishment, but he's got some investment toward credit in there already. But then Florida Atlantic University is asked about the incident by a local television station. They issued the following statement. Faculty and students at academic institutions pursue knowledge and engage in open discourse. While at times the topics discussed may be sensitive, a university environment is a venue for such dialogue and debate, unquote. This is not dialogue or debate. You are over the top in offending important beliefs of your students and outsiders. This is just asinine. Okay, this story has some legs, as this account points out. And university then issued, finally, a statement of apology. They issued a statement of apology saying the exercise was optional and that no students had been disciplined as a result of it. This exercise will not be used again, the statement continued. The university holds dear its core values. We sincerely apologize for any offense this caused. Florida Atlantic University respects all religions and welcomes people of all faiths, backgrounds, and beliefs. The university, however, looks like they filed charges against the student, Ryan Rotella, who refused to stomp on the name Jesus. And he's been brought up on charges by the school and no longer attend class, according to documents obtained by Fox News. And so the story continues. It's unresolved. And Ryan Rotella has received enormous support from Christians across the nation. So bully for him. one of the questions that arises, of course, is why was he the only student to protest? Okay, now, in the way of gratuitous insults, I've got to point to Justin Raimundo of antiwar.com. He's the chief in charge at antiwar.com, and nearly every day I look at antiwar.com. Well, he's doing a story or writing a op-ed on the end of life for Boris Borisovsky, widely labeled a Russian oligarch over in London, England. And by the by, Justin Raimundo writes, under Alexander Borisovsky's patronage, Alexander Litvinenko, a convert to Islam, wrote a series of books purporting to prove Putin and his supporters were behind virtually every terrorist attack in Russia attributed to Chechenian terrorists. According to their story, it was all a hoax designed to perpetuate Putin in power. Well, I've looked at this a little bit, and there's a really powerful case that the KGB / FSB staged this terrorist event and pinned it on the Chechens. Well, Raimundo goes on, quote, while this was laughed at in Russia the same way we laugh at the truthers who insist it was the U.S. government itself that brought down the Twin Towers on 9/11 via controlled demolition or whatever, the anti-Russian, anti-Putin propagandists made use of it in the West where it was uncritically repeated. Well, it's a gratuitous slam at anybody who challenges the official account. You don't have to scratch very deep to be raised out because the government account of 9/11 is a lie from top to bottom. And, of course, I've invested a lot of my time in that on that issue. Well, let's turn to my guest for today, Bill Anderson. Bill is professor of economics in the College of Business at Prosper State in Maryland, the mountainous section of Western Maryland, and he's a no-nonsense guy. I love the way he writes and thought he could be a sterling guest on the show. Bill, let me give you a short bio, and you correct everything I get wrong. He's a Bachelor of Science from the University of Tennessee in Communication, a Master's from Clemson in Economics, a PhD in Economics from Auburn University, and he's the MBA coordinator. And welcome, Bill.
Hey, how you doing, Ed? You got all that right. Hey, I need to tell you, I just sent off an article to lewrockwell.com. I don't know if he'll use it, but on the Florida Atlantic thing. But I also mentioned Florida Atlantic is has this, I've forgotten the name of the company, but some big private prison company is has the naming rights. Yeah, Lenore Skenazy interviewed me on that a while back, and so I figured, you know, this was just too rich for me, you know, to pass up.
Yes. Okay, now one of the let's have a little small talk here. Frostburg is the name of the state campus that Bill teaches at, and you guys got hit pretty good living up to your name of Frost lately, right?
Yeah, we've got in my house. Now I'm over in Garrett County, about 5 miles from here, but we got about a foot of snow. Been out cross country skiing the last couple of days and keeping the wood stove going because it is cold.
Yes, living up to your name. I noticed there's a town in Florida named Frostproof. That's more attractive to yours truly than Frostburg.
If you come up, you know, if you live up here, now I will say this, the summers are really nice, whereas in Frostproof, Florida, summers are not very nice, but here summers are quite glorious, but you have to put up with winter, lots of it. We've had, in fact, our first snowfall this winter was 5 months ago. We've had, Morgan, a five-month winter this year. Take that, Al Gore.
Wow. Hey, I have a son-in-law who runs an establishment not far from you in McHenry, you know, Deep Creek Lake.
Yeah.
It's Mountain State Brew Pub and Pizza.
Yeah, I know where that is.
Okay.
Ah, okay. He's your son-in-law?
Yes.
Yep. Which is them? I gotta go. We gotta go check the place out.
It's very down-to-earth, homey. You know, mountain West Virginia interior, and it's they do gourmet pizzas, but I won't hold it against them. You know, and it's.
Yeah.
Mountain State Brewery, Brian is a brewmaster, and he's a master chef, too. Try it sometime.
This is cool.
Yeah. So I've been over in your neck of the woods from time to time.
Oh, you were over at my house then.
Yeah. Maybe I'll look you up. Who knows? I might be there next summer.
Yeah, we're just off exit 29 on 68.
Yeah, great. Hey, let me go to some content now here. I just learned via the Cato Policy Report that James M. Buchanan died at age 93, the famous co-inventor, founder of the whole public choice brand of economics, and a 1986 Nobel Prize winner in economic science. So he was one of the good guys, wasn't he, Bill?
He was. You know, Armin Alchin died a couple weeks ago, too.
Yes. He's another great one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, on the other side of the break, we're going to talk change in economics. And one of the great things about my guest, Bill Anderson, is that he is a former newsman. And we're going to talk media and economics. We're going to mix those all together. And this is the Reynolds Reveal. So rejoin us on the other side of the break. What's been shaking up and down the line? I'm here to stand slightly behind the time.
Ever ask yourself, where do the towers go? Well, if you want the truth, if you can handle the truth, tune in Thursdays and Fridays from 5 till 7 Pacific Coast Time. Dr. Judy Wood is doing a program called ICU PSYOP Recovery Program, addressing your questions, your curiosities, your mysteries regarding that fateful day. So it's a character-driven production on Guerrilla Media Network, 5 to 7, Thursdays and Friday evenings, Pacific Coast Time. If you can handle the truth, tune in.
Do you owe the IRS more than $10,000? Well, it happens to the best of us. Just ask Charlie.
I was a pro NFL player, defensive back. Yes, I did get a letter from the IRS.
It's a scary thing, even for a big man like Charlie.
Well, man, when you see those dreaded letters, capital IRS, $60,000, man, you almost dropped to your knees. You know, they were trying to levy my accounts, garnish me, real bad situation.
Charlie found out about the law offices of Craig Zimmerman.
I heard their commercial on the radio. I said, well, hey, let me give them a call. It was like talking to my brother, talking to a great friend. I called Craig Zimmerman, and they put a stop to it.
You'll love the way they do business.
Like we say in the NFL, they never drop the ball. They did a great job for me.
You may be able to significantly reduce your tax debt. Call the law offices of Craig Zimmerman and get your game plan. 800-638-0727.
Craig Zimmerman, they threw a touchdown for me.
Call now and find out how much you can save. 800-638-0727. 800-638-0727.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you about a revolutionary new product from our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, and electronic cigarettes. If you're a smoker, traditional cigarettes have lots of chemical carcinogens and are being sold for up to $11 a pack in some places around the country. Electronic cigarettes, on the other hand, consist of only three ingredients and are a fraction of the price of traditional cigarettes. It creates what looks like smoke, but is actually a harmless water vapor while giving you the nicotine your body's craving. Visit our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, at www.futuresmokes.com today. Once you're there, you'll find the hottest electronic cigarettes and accessories and over 100 choices of intensely flavored liquid nicotine. No tar, no carcinogens, and no foul odors. The electronic cigarette truly is the future of smoking. And fans of the Pete Santilli Show get an unconditional satisfaction guarantee and a 10% discount with coupon code REVOLT at checkout. www.futuresmokes.com.
Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cooking Company. Hand-rolled traditional-style Italian cookies from recipes passed down through the generations from Sicily to Louisiana. A taste of the old world can now be savored and made a tradition in every home worldwide. Imagine the delight of your family and guests when they bite into the authentic taste of Italy at your next family holiday or special occasion. Mamma Mia's Authentic Cooking Company, preserving the art of Italian baking and providing you with quality, delightful cookies that you will enjoy for years to come. 14 different Italian cookies sold by the pound and FedEx to your door. Could anything be more convenient? Visit MamaMia's.com and browse in Mama's Cookie Gallery for ideas for your next party and custom cookie order. Beautiful cookies baked in America, inspired by Italy and Mama's love. Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookies. Traditional, convenient, and delicioso. Biscotto molto buono.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. The number, should you wish to call and talk to Morgan or my guest economist, Bill Anderson, is 218-862-9829. That number again, 218-862-9829. Bill, one of the more interesting things about you is that you were a newsman, a media guy initially, and that reminds me of another well-known economist, Benjamin M. Anderson, the same last name, who was a trained economist and a journalist, and he has a famous book about the first five decades of the 20th century, the history of the economy and the political economy, called Economics and the Public Welfare, a very well done, very interesting read. So
I've used that book, by the way, when I wrote my a chapter in the it was called the Desk Reference Book on World War II. I wrote the economics of World War II and leaned heavily on that book. It's sitting on the shelf right behind me.
Great. Yeah. No relation, I assume, but. Tell us about your early days, your pre-professional economist career.
Well, I was a newspaper reporter for a while, and it was okay. I enjoyed some stuff. I wrote pretty well. I didn't like a lot of the other stuff with it. And I ultimately just went into teaching. And but found got an interest in economics. Bill Peterson got me interested down in Chattanooga. This is when I was living down there, and so he died
not many months ago, didn't he?
He died. He died. Yes. He died. I think about 5 months ago.
Yes. Okay. Go ahead.
Anyway, so he talked me into getting in this economic essay contest. Sponsored by the Mont Pelerin Society, or I think that that's actually the Garvey family, and the winners would go to the make a presentation at the Mont Pelerin Society, and I got in and ended up winning the thing, which is how I ended up in West Germany. And it's how I met you.
That's right. I'd forgotten that, but we were in that same contest. Well, it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy to win. Yes.
That's right. So it was the journalism. I'll tell you what journalism did, where it helped me a lot in my you have to put things together very quickly. And that's the that's one of the things that's really important. You have to put stuff together quickly. You have to be able to explain something to somebody else who's reading. And one of the things we had to do, this is before you had any type of media devices, we used to have, if we were in the field, we would have to call in a story over the phone, and we would have to make it up in our heads and literally, you know, give it to somebody who would type it down and then give it to the city editor. And all that really helped me in putting things together. Now, I also spent a lot of time meeting reporters from elsewhere, and my gosh, I never met, especially the farther up the ladder they were, you know, higher on the national scale or New York Times, my gosh, they were insufferably conceited.
Yes.
Also stupid, by the way. Most of them were not that intelligent, but they were very much full of themselves. And so I learned something about journalists there and have not forgotten that.
I my encounters with the New York Times reporters when I was chief economist at the Department of Labor, and the Secretary of Labor would talk to them on Numbers Day when the employment unemployment numbers were released on Fridays, typically the first Friday of the month. I was usually impressed. Somebody was with the New York Times. They were intellectually smart. They might be sophisticated idiots, but yeah. they had the IQ points.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Bill. Yeah, in a way they're all dumb. Yeah, or typically are. But now I want to get you've got some special insight with your experience about the evolution or the demise of newspapers, the corporate media, and how they won't touch any conspiracy theories. You know, just the whole establishment stenographer for the government type allegations. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that there's a lot to it. You have to remember that modern journalism, as we know it, with its canon of ethics and the way that you do news and editorials, this is a product of the progressive era. And these folks, years ago, I mean a century ago, journalists bought into nationalism and they bought into progressivism. And the progressivism was that, you know, that the government should be making most of the decisions and for people, and most reporters, but they really believe that. I mean, for example, that very few of them have any problem with what Bloomberg is doing in New York, telling people what they can eat and drink and how much they can eat and drink and the like. And what you have, it's this whole progressive mentality. It's a mentality that gave us people like Woodrow Wilson and the disaster of World War I, and gave us Herbert Hoover, and FDR, who gave us the Great Depression. But you have to understand that these journalists are very much, they're true believers in the state and what the state can do. And to them, the state is this wonderful entity, as long as it's in the hands of the right people, that gives us lots of things. And that they need, and that the state, when it's done properly, comforts the afflicted and afflicts the comfortable. Yeah, that's their favorite line, you know. The journalists, and they're all tied in with government officials. You're not going to see too many journalists tied in with any business person or whatever, unless it's like with Bill Gates, tied in with the foundation or whatever.
Even the business beat reporters,
their status,
really. So,
oh yeah,
kind of the standard image. Then, kind of 9 out of 10 of them are leftists, and the few rightists are in Fox News or American Free Press, or some other outlet. They aren't that numerous.
No, but even with the Fox News, a lot of them are, I mean, they believe in conservative government, but they had no problem pushing Bush and his invasion of Iraq and and all of the American military adventures abroad, which are just really, really costing this country in all sorts of, not just money, but in all sorts of ways. So I think that people have to understand that modern journalism is not going to, these folks think that you guys like you and me are idiots because we believe in not only civil liberties, but we actually believe the government should be leaving us alone. And that, to them, they cannot, I mean, that just does not compute at all.
Yes, big government's the vehicle for social improvement.
Absolutely.
Really, conservatives believe that, too. Only they have a different agenda, some overlapping, but they both sides want to use big government.
Oh, absolutely. And if you, Morgan, think about, for example, the drug war. The drug war really began with the conservatives before then, you had prohibition. Although prohibition actually was a progressive. It came out of the progressive movement, which we would call today the liberals. The liberals were more in favor of that, but they got the conservative progressives to go along with it. But yeah, you have a lot of the progressives. I mean, the conservative progressives tend to be very, very supportive of whatever the police do, and whoever they beat up doesn't matter. They probably deserved it. On and on,
curbstone justice, it's called. Yeah.
I'll be honest. I wrote a lot on that Duke lacrosse case. I had a very hard time getting conservatives, especially the so-called evangelical conservatives or the religious right people, to take a hard look at what was happening. I had a piece. Let me give you an example. Are you familiar? You're familiar with Pat Buchanan's magazine, The American Conservative.
Yes.
Okay. I had we had in essence agreed I was going to do a piece on the Duke lacrosse case, and this was just a couple days before Thanksgiving of 2006, and I concentrated on the prosecution and what the prosecutor and the abuses of the prosecutor and the police. I didn't write much about the Duke faculty. I wrote some, but I basically dealt with the evidence, why it was that Nifong was wrong, and they decided to kill it without giving me a kill fee, of course. And a couple months later, they had an article on it, which. The whole article was based on attacking the Duke faculty. So the idea is that we can attack these liberals, but going after a prosecutor, and saying that the police and the prosecution are doing bad things. Well, we can't have that. And so that was, believe me, that was a real eye opener for me. But a lot of conservatives, they like big government, but they like big government in kicking butt, in other words.
Yes. I have a son who is a successful criminal defense attorney in Texas, and I've also written on that in the 90s. And you would have in the early 90s, there was a lot of public discontent with crime. Less so now that we've quadrupled our prison population, but the legislation was more and more draconian. So the prosecutors can basically get the accused to give up pretty quickly, and that's what they like. It's just a mass production thing. So these punishments are way out of whack, even though I'm a hard-nosed guy, that there should be consequences for criminal behavior.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is true. And a lot of this is driven by whatever happened to cynicism about, as captured by the cliche, that you can't legislate morals. So much of this is driven by the war on drugs. So many crimes of violence are, you look at the Mexican border. Now, there's a great case where these cartels are, basically into mass murdering each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the real source here is that there's enormous American demand for recreational drugs, which I'm not endorsing. I'm just saying it's a fact.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
The fact that it's illegal, it just has this enormous, we have this enormous underworld infrastructure to supply those demands.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And you have this drug war, and the drug war really got ratcheted up during the Reagan administration. And keep in mind how that came about, and that was that Nancy Reagan was getting a lot of criticism in the media. They were all over her because, they were going by the old stereotypes. Well, they're rich people. They like rich people. And so we're going to – and she was an easy target. So they went after her. So she went and they concocted this Just Say No campaign for her, Just Say No to Drugs. And so she was the spokesperson behind that. And, if you want to say no to drugs, and if drugs are bad, okay, well, we've got to have an enforcement mechanism. And so they started ratcheting up and going to zero tolerance on drugs. And, our prisons started filling up pretty quickly. And when Bill Clinton came to power, by the way, during Clinton's 8 years, the American prison population literally doubled. So Clinton found, by the way, that the other, after Dukakis took a beating in 1988 for standing up for civil liberties, the Democrats learned their lesson. And so we no longer have any civil liberties Democrats out there. We've got Democrats who think that the President of the United States, by his simple thinking, should have the power to kill, to get his button men to kill whoever he thinks should be killed.
I mean, and we can trust who's ever in that office to act as a judge, jury, executioner, can't we? Well, here we are on the Reynolds Reveal, and on the other side of the break, I think we need to ask Bill Anderson to take up the whole Keynesian fiscal and monetary policies we are suffering under. Please join Morgan and Bill on the other side of the break to pick our economic policy.
Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookie Company. Hand-rolled traditional-style Italian cookies from recipes passed down through the generations from Sicily to Louisiana. A taste of the old world can now be savored and made a tradition in every home worldwide. Imagine the delight of your family and guests when they bite into the authentic taste of Italy at your next family holiday or special occasion. Mamma Mia's Authentic Cookie Company, preserving the art of Italian baking and providing you with quality, delightful cookies that you will enjoy for years to come. 14 different Italian cookies sold by the pound and FedEx to your door. Could anything be more convenient? Visit MamaMia's.com and browse in Mama's Cookie Gallery for ideas for your next party and custom cookie order. Beautiful cookies baked in America, inspired by Italy and Mama's love. Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookies. Traditional, convenient, and delicioso. Biscotto molto buono.
This is Dr. Judy Wood, author of Where Did the Towers Go? And you're listening to the Guerrilla Media Network.
Ever ask yourself, where did the towers go? Well, if you want the truth, if you can handle the truth, tune in Thursdays and Fridays from 5 till 7 Pacific Coast Time. Dr. Judy Wood is doing a program called ICU PSYOP Recovery Program, addressing your questions, your curiosities, your mysteries regarding that fateful day. So it's a character-driven production on Guerrilla Media Network, 5 to 7, Thursdays and Friday evenings, Pacific Coast Time. If you can handle the truth, tune in.
Do you owe the IRS more than $10,000? Well, it happens to the best of us. Just ask Charlie.
I was a pro NFL player, defensive back. Yes, I did get a letter from the IRS.
It's a scary thing, even for a big man like Charlie.
Well, man, when you see those dreaded letters, capital IRS, $60,000, man, you almost dropped to your knees. You know, they were trying to levy my accounts, garnish me, real bad situation.
Charlie found out about the law offices of Craig Zimmerman.
I heard their commercial on the radio. I said, well, hey, let me give them a call. It was like talking to my brother, talking to a great friend. I called Craig Zimmerman, and they put a stop to it.
You'll love the way they do business.
Like we say in the NFL, they never drop the ball. They did a great job for me.
You may be able to significantly reduce your tax debt. Call the law offices of Craig Zimmerman and get your game plan. 800-638-0727.
Craig Zimmerman, they threw a touchdown for me.
Call now and find out how much you can save. 800-638-0727. 800-638-0727.
Jay's Jerky is a proud sponsor of the Pete Santilli Show. Not only that, Jay's been a loyal listener since we first got
super
started.
Super lean and beefy.
Visit thepetesantillishow.com and click on the Jay's Jerky ad anywhere on the page. You'll find great deals, Jay's weekly and daily specials, and best of all, Jay supports the Pete Santilli Show like no other sponsor.
It's smoking.
Listen live daily to the Pete Santilli Show. You'll never know when he's calling in, but when he does, you can bet he's got an offer you won't be able to pass up.
Superior quality meat.
Jay's Premium Natural Jerky. Wonderful flavors in beef, chicken, turkey, and natural buffalo jerky.
For a mouth-watering, organic experience, grab a bag of Jay's Jerky today.
Place your order today.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds. If you would like to call in and speak with our guest, economist Bill Anderson, or me, Morgan Reynolds, the number is 218-862-9829. 218-862-9829. Bill, I said we were going to turn to Keynesian economic policies and Professor Paul Krugman, but let's put that off for a couple of minutes. I had another thought on the war on drugs. And in 1994-95, I was a staffer as a visiting scholar with the Joint Economic Committee. And mostly what we were up to with the Republican minority was harpooning Hillary Care to death.
Oh, yeah.
But that was also on the agenda. That was a live issue, was GOP, I called it pure cynicism, electoral appeal to show how tough the GOP is on crime by federalizing more crimes, making the federal system the model tough guy. You know, the sentencing commission was created, and limiting what federal judges could do without some kind of difficulty in their career and the like. And really, it was, I said, you know, you guys need to go back to the Constitution and the Federalist Papers and see where crime control was thought to be best, and that was state and local. So you're federalizing, you're turning the police into military, you know, the whole SWAT glamour, and it's really gone downhill in terms of what the cause of freedom is and where we are.
Oh yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that the and really starting with Nixon, you know, and RICO, the RICO statutes, And what they decided to do was try to find a way around the constitutional restraints on the federal government regarding crime. And so what they ended up doing was creating thousands of federal crimes, and they literally are now at a position where they can take legal actions and turn them into crimes. And it's really frightening because anybody can be targeted. And you know, these, and what they will do is they will make it to where, you know, they'll just keep coming at you to where you have to plead to something just to get them off your back. And they'll admit, no, you didn't do anything wrong, but it doesn't matter. We want to take you down anyway. And if you think about it, it's because these people want to get raises, they want to get promotions, and the only way they can do it is to destroy your life.
Well, that reminds me of Rudy Giuliani, and there are other prosecutors you would know about who use that notoriety as a tough guy on crime to elevate themselves into more powerful and more lucrative positions. Isn't that your take on Rudy Giuliani?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Giuliani, and he did real damage. Several years ago, Candace Jackson and I did a paper on the Wall Street prosecutions and some of the after effects of them. And, you know, he went after Michael Milken, but he went after more because Salomon Brothers and Goldman Sachs and those people wanted Giuliani to go. And I think they basically promised him, look, if you go after Milken, we'll give you campaign money, and like, because Giuliani was very, very ambitious. And ultimately, you know, despite all the demonization that Milken got, all they uncovered were some very minor regulatory violations, and they found a way to criminalize them, and they were bragging afterwards. So one of the prosecutors bragged to a law class at Rutgers University that they hadn't criminalized this stuff before. This was the first time these were pending any offenses, but boy, you know, it sure was a lot of fun. And, you know, as you think about this, Michael Milken had resources to get really good attorneys, and yet they were able to box him in so that the rest of us really don't have a chance.
Well, was Milken's crime basically democratizing the market to dump incompetent or inefficient management? In other words, allow corporate takeovers to occur more fluidly and increase shareholder value.
Yeah, it was through the leveraged buyouts. Remember, and I don't know if you remember an economist, Mark Mitchell. I lived with him for a while when we were both doing graduate work at Clemson. And Mark ended up writing a paper in the 1989 Journal of Financial Economics, it pointed out that Congress, through trying to push through a bill that would end leverage buyouts, was the entity that caused that big 1987 stock market crash. You remember that one? And I think And they, you know, of course, they blamed everything else, but Mitchell was able to show that it was actually Congress that did it. But Giuliani did a lot of damage. And what they did also was there were whole alternative ways of financing things. I mean, you look at things like CNN. CNN arranged its financing through Milken because none of the respectable people would touch Ted Turner or touch something risky like Cable News Network, because they all knew it was going to fail. And you had McCall Cellular, a lot of the MCI, which was the first real competition to the AT&T long-distance monopoly. All this stuff came through Michael Milken selling these high-yield bonds, and the rest of Wall Street didn't like it. And so, they were jealous, and he was making a lot of money, and they didn't like that either.
Yeah, newcomers and interlopers, right? We don't like them. We're the established powers in the marketplace. We don't like new competitors with new innovative financial access.
Oh, yeah. It was basically middle school child's play on Wall Street. But, you know, you're playing much higher stakes You've got state agents. I mean, remember that time they had that raid on the trading floor at Newport Securities? They just Princeton Newport Securities. They literally brought in armed people with machine guns, ready to gun down guys in the middle of trading, and they were dragging people off the trading floor, you know, throwing handcuffs at them, you know, scaring them to death. And you know, the mm-hmm. by the way, the media loved it. Wow, action! You know, they were just coming in there, and this is just terrific. Look at these, you know, we're going to show these criminals what's up. Well, nobody committed any crimes, but you know, Giuliani was just trying to get some publicity, and of course, it was the media that made him famous. Oh, by the way, during the Milken investigation, Giuliani himself leaked illegally leaked grand jury information to James Stewart and Laurie Cohen. James Stewart was at the Wall Street Journal. I think Laurie Cohen at the time was at the New York Times. And these people were able to make their careers off that. And they helped Giuliani commit felonies. And the maximum prison term is 5 years in prison. So there were crimes committed during the whole Wall Street thing. But they just happened to be committed by Rudy Giuliani and the U.S. attorneys. Something to think about.
Oh, and we wouldn't want to prosecute them now, would we? We'd shake public confidence in the system.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you have a lot of that. You know, I'm sure your son has heard, because your son runs into prosecutors who lie and who hide evidence. And then when you go to the state bars or the entities that regulate these people and hold their licenses, and they'll tell you, well, look, we can't go after them because if we do, then it'll shake people's confidence in the system. You know, then in other words, what they're really saying is then people will know the truth, what these people really are like, and then, you know, they'll come after us. That's really what it's about.
Well, you know, there's another aspect of this. We'll call it rent-seeking behavior by all the participants,
yeah.
Where the criminal defense bar really isn't against all these stout, draconian punishments and big law enforcement making a lot of arrests, because obviously it creates business.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
It increases the demand for defense attorneys. So even though you might have a good attorney, like my son is, and he will do well on you on your behalf, but in representing you, but the system is it creates a lot of demand for defense attorneys, unfortunately. Well, let's go to the whole issue of political economy and the public policies that are being pursued here. Cheered on by Paul Krugman in particular, who has a column that appears twice a week in the New York Times. It's certainly a highly visible and arguably influential pulpit that he has to preach from. And here's a statement from Paul Krugman, the famous Princeton economist and Nobel Prize winner in 2008. He says, I'm trying to make this progressive movement in American history a success. That's where I'm pushing, unquote. Now, we might well agree with that, but on the other side of the break, let's discuss the political economy and our policies with Bill Anderson from Frostburg State University. This is the Reynolds Reveal, so please return.
Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookie Company. Hand-rolled traditional-style Italian cookies from recipes passed down through the generations from Sicily to Louisiana. A taste of the old world can now be savored and made a tradition in every home worldwide. Imagine the delight of your family and guests when they bite into the authentic taste of Italy at your next family holiday or special occasion. Mamma Mia's Authentic Cookie Company, preserving the art of Italian baking and providing you with quality, delightful cookies that you will enjoy for years to come. 14 different Italian cookies sold by the pound and FedEx to your door. Could anything be more convenient? Visit MamaMia's.com and browse in Mama's Cookie Gallery for ideas for your next party and custom cookie order. Beautiful cookies baked in America, inspired by Italy and Mama's love. Mamma Mia's authentic Italian cookies. Traditional, convenient, and delicioso. Biscotto molto buono.
Are you over your head in debt and not sure what to do? Did you know there's a way to legally wipe out debt? Stop harassing phone calls, even stop foreclosure or repossession? Well, the answer is yes. Pick up the phone right now and call the bankruptcy hotline at the law offices of Craig Zimmerman. With 17 years experience as a practicing attorney, Craig knows how to get the creditors off your back and get you peace of mind. Most people don't realize that bankruptcy is a great alternative by immediately stopping collection calls, allowing you to keep your home, eliminate all of your debt, and give you a fresh start. Call now for a free, no-obligation consultation at 800-281-2286 and learn how bankruptcy could help you. So stop wondering what to do with your debt and call us at 800-281-2286. 800-281-2286. Not all will qualify. The law offices of Craig Zimmerman is federally designated as a debt relief agency. Office is located in Dallas and Santa Ana, California.
Jay's Jerky is a proud sponsor of the Pete Santilli Show. Not only that, Jay's been a loyal listener since we first got
super
started.
Super lean and beefy.
Visit thepetesantillishow.com and click on the Jay's Jerky ad anywhere on the page. You'll find great deals, Jay's weekly and daily specials, and best of all, Jay supports the Pete Santilli Show like no other sponsor.
It's smoking.
Listen live daily to the Pete Santilli Show. You'll never know when he's calling in, but when he does, you can bet he's got an offer you won't be able to pass up.
Superior quality meat.
Jay's Premium Natural Jerky. Wonderful flavors in beef, chicken, turkey, and natural buffalo jerky.
For a mouth-watering organic experience, grab a bag of Jay's Jerky today.
Place your order today. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you about a revolutionary new product from our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, an electronic cigarette. If you're a smoker, traditional cigarettes have lots of chemical carcinogens and are being sold for up to $11 a pack in some places around the country. Electronic cigarettes, on the other hand, consist of only three ingredients and are a fraction of the price of traditional cigarettes. It creates what looks like smoke, but it's actually a harmless water vapor while giving you the nicotine your body's craving. Visit our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, at www.futuresmokes.com today. Once you're there, you'll find the hottest electronic cigarettes and accessories and over 100 choices of intensely flavored liquid nicotine. No tar, no carcinogens, and no foul odors. The electronic cigarette truly is the future of smoking. And fans of the Pete Santilli Show get an unconditional satisfaction guarantee and a 10% discount with coupon code REVOLT at checkout. www.futuresmoke.com.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. I am Morgan Reynolds, your host. And if you would like to call in and speak with our guest, economist Bill Anderson, or with Morgan Reynolds, you may call 218-862-9829. That number again, 218-862-9829. Now, our technician, Pete Santilli. Hi, Pete. Mentioned what's in the news when it comes to the economy and the crises in Europe. Cyprus is in the news, and I looked it up the other day, and Cyprus is not exactly a backwater. They actually have higher income, average incomes than does the average in the Eurozone, and it's a big tourist spot, Mecca, and they've recently discovered rich natural gas deposits. Well, they're having a financial crisis, And this whole question of the bailout that's ongoing, the capital controls, runs on the bank are all in the news. So my guest, Bill Anderson, has written on this lately and has some insight. So, Bill, tell us what's going on over in Cyprus.
Well, what's going on is that Cyprus decided to, in essence, get in the offshore banking business. And you had the biggest offender was actually a state-controlled bank. Something that Krugman doesn't say, of course, because Krugman wants you to believe all banks are pure private enterprise. But that the bankers, they were getting a lot of deposits from especially Russians and people who were wanting to hide some of the money or keep it from the tax authorities at home. And so Cyprus banks were a very, very welcome place and kind of like I think what Switzerland used to be, although these banks were a little more reckless. But what they did was they lent the government of Greece a lot of money. Now, Morgan, something in life that there are many things in life that you do not do. You do not spit into the wind. You do not loan money to the Greek government. And, you just don't do that. And so what you've got is, of course, that payment crisis. The Greek government can't pay back the loans. And so now the banks are in trouble because their balance sheets do not look very good. They've got more liabilities than assets. And so they're in trouble. And here's the thing: and they're also on the euro, all right. And so the European Central Bank said, "Well, we'll bail you out, but you've got to come up with about $6 billion." And so the way they were going to do it was to seize, large portions of the bank accounts. Of depositors, and I'm not talking about just the wealthy depositors. I'm talking about all the guys, all the little guys, and they're going to make and they've been back and forth on that. All right. Now, when we talk about capital controls, what we mean is the government tells people you can only take so much money out of the country. All right. Now, why would you do that? Because either the government wants to seize your money, which is your property, or they want to inflate. And if they inflate, obviously you want to exchange your money and get it into something else. Well, you see that the governments are trying to keep that from happening because if people pull the money out of the banks, then the banks will be in even worse shape because their balance sheets will look even worse, and so then they'll have a bigger crisis. And so it's all about, ultimately it's about a government bank loaning money to another government that didn't pay its bills. I mean, that's, in other words, one deadbeat loaning to another. It's kind of like member Patton says, I'll drink to that, one son of a bitch to another. And, so you got one deadbeat loaning money to another deadbeat, and we're all just shocked that the whole thing just collapses. But these capital controls are really bad because what they're in essence they're a form of jail for your money, and of course Paul Krugman thinks that's great.
All in the interest of social welfare, somehow defined. Yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly right. But of course, social welfare is always defined by somebody else who benefits. It isn't defined by people who are actually hurt by social welfare policies.
Now, at the root of this, despite all the particulars and the complications, at the root of it always is the fractional reserve bank.
Oh, yeah.
Supported by and when people lose confidence, as they do in a crisis, almost by definition, the bank doesn't have the money that you think is there because it's loaned out or in other illiquid forms. And they can't deliver, so they need a central bank to somehow smooth this over or restore public confidence and allow these insolvent banks to continue on as per normal, so that they typically only need 5 or 10% of the deposits on hand to make ordinary transactions, right? So it's not till a crisis occurs that we find out the bank emperors are naked.
Exactly. And here's the thing, that all of the policies that we're seeing from Ben Bernanke, where, you know, where the Fed is, you know, where the Fed is just dumping money everywhere, showering the world with dollars, it's all done for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to prevent bank runs. Because what these guys fear, if you have bank runs, why then a lot of the house of cards that we're seeing in finance, they will come down, and it takes a while to adjust. And so the government, and by the way, ever since 2008, when the, you know, when the full scale of the meltdown became, you know, visible to people, the government has done everything it could to keep the market from making the necessary adjustments so that we can get back to actually making things, creating things. And, I mean, amazingly, absolutely amazingly, that's what we're seeing. And why is the economy so bad? It's bad because the government constantly is trying to keep the old boom going and funnel investment money into those things that will not stand up. And, of course, Obama has, you know, his green energy, which makes it worse. But, you know, the problem with the Keynesians don't see real assets. Morgan, for example, if you're a labor economist and possibly the best one in the country. I imagine you and Richard Vedder had a lot of good times together.
Yeah, Lowell Galloway, yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, Richard's crazy man anyway. We all know that. But but you understand, okay, labor is not just a statistic. It is something that you own. It is a commodity. It's something of value. Likewise, other than capital goods, resources, these things all fit together in essence, an economic puzzle. Well, Keynesian doesn't see that. Keynesian just sees it all as one, as Bob Higgs liked to call it, one amorphous goo, homogeneous goo, and you just throw money into it. You just throw money into the pot and stir it, and out comes the golden calf, or at least an economist, in our economy, I mean. And so that's really what the, you know, the Keynesian thing, they think, well, we're going to create demand by throwing money at something. You know, you create demand by creating real things, something that somebody else is going to want, that you can exchange for something else. And the Keynesians can't see it, and unfortunately, they have had the upper hand in government policy for over the last several years.
We have a caller on line one. Hello, caller. Go ahead. You have a question for Bill Anderson.
Yeah, I can't hear. Okay.
Caller? Well, we got a technical problem maybe that we can't hear our call.
Yeah, I couldn't hear anything. I couldn't hear the caller.
Bill, this raises
all callers are unmuted.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah, I can hear Pete.
Oh, okay. Hi, yeah, this is Pete Santilli. I have a question as a caller. You ready? Here's the question. If and either one of you can answer this question, what's remarkable, I think everyone needs to understand this, whether you're an economist or just a meat and potatoes depositor. When everyone goes to a bank and asks for their own hard-earned money that they've deposited, and the bank all of a sudden collapses, I mean, isn't that what they call a Ponzi scheme?
Yeah, I mean it's Bernie Madoff. I remember I was at a talk that Peter Schiff gave one time, and he said, talking about the Obama administration's policies, he said they should have made Bernie Madoff Secretary of the Treasury. And I mean, that's about right. It's basically what we have, guys, is a Bernie Madoff economy. And unfortunately, our hero, Bernie, is in jail. You know, where is Bernie when we need him? If we're going to have a true Bernie Madoff economy, we need the master to guide us. But, yeah, we've got, you know, this is Bernie Madoff on a much larger scale.
Well, that's the trouble with our conventional banking, is that there's double ownership of demand deposits, right? You think you own it in fee simple, you can get all of it or part of it anytime. But the bank, meanwhile, is saying, oh, no, wait a minute. I'm going to go out and invest it. It's like parking your RV in storage. And meanwhile, the storage owner is renting it out part-time. So you can't get your RV out of – okay, we've got another caller, 856 area code. Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Hello. You have a question for Bill Anderson.
No, actually, I was just calling in. I was in the chat room, and Pete was asking for people to call in. But I'm actually glad I got you, folks. Yeah, we're staring down right now in Cyprus. This is, in my personal opinion, this is going to be the litmus test and one of the linchpins. I mean, to see if it, you know, this is a beta test in my mind to see if that's going to happen in the United States. How do you folks feel about that?
It could. The only reason I think that, you know, I mean, that it doesn't is that the banks are not in quite as bad a shape as some of them in Cyprus because we haven't been lending to Greece. You see, lending to Greece is always a bad thing. However, at the same time, that there isn't anything real propping up the banks for the most part. You know, you've got government bonds, but government bonds are paid back by the sale of other government bonds. That's also a Ponzi scheme. And it's, by the way, it's illegal for corporations or municipalities or even states to issue bonds to pay off other bonds. It is only legal with the U.S. government. A little bit of securities law there. But, yeah, what you have right now is a situation where the government is either printing money to pay back its loans or it's paying back its loans by taking out more loans, you know, borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. Well, you're talking about something that is not sustainable. And now guys like Paul Krugman think it is sustainable. I mean, Krugman laughs at anybody who thinks that, oh, this is really a bad thing to be doing. To him, that's just sound economics. It's sound finance.
Here's a headline, Bill.
Yeah.
Paul Krugman column reprinted in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. What deficit crisis?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, the reason what he's saying is, hey, we can print money, so we're fine. We have our own currency, and it's the world currency right now, so therefore we can do it. You know, we can get away with it. And it's almost an accident of history. The euro is weak, and the dollar is weak, but they're weak together. The Japanese government is trying to weaken the yen. The Swiss government didn't want to get put in a situation where its currency was so highly valued that the Swiss couldn't export anything, and it would be just frightfully expensive for any tourist to come to Switzerland. And so they've, in essence, been inflating their own currency. So what you've got right now is a situation where everybody's trying to inflate against each other. And that's but inflation takes a toll, and inflation creates all sorts of economic imbalances. And I'm talking about imbalances in the real economy, you know, not in Krugman's Wonderland economy. We're talking the real economy, and that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where the crises begin.
Yeah, we've got a race to the bottom with this competitive devaluations going on. You know, some of these other central banks and world or national leaders are taking it to Bernanke, saying, no, you're not helping us by printing another $85 billion a month. You guys are trying to keep the value of the dollar low to promote your exports and hurt us, beggar thy neighbor policies. So there's a lot of falling out with each other going on there. And here's the let's get your reaction to this, Bill. Here's the problem. Yeah, you got your own currency. Yeah, it's a fiat currency. You can print as much as you want. You can't print gold. You can print all this stuff up, but you're risking a hyperinflation. That's devastating.
Yeah. Well, you see, these guys, what they think is that, well, we can just throw in price controls and we'll solve that problem. No big deal. And Or they look and say, well, we haven't had hyperinflation yet, so therefore, obviously, we're not going to have it. And I think that, you know, the Austrians need to be very careful about saying, okay, now in 2013, that's when the collapse comes. We don't know what will happen this year, how things will muddle through. What we do know is economics. We know the fundamentals, the foundations of, you know, of economic science, and we know that a lot of these foundations are being chipped away.
Hello, hey, caller, let me get your first name, caller, 856 area code. What's your first name?
Morgan, he dropped.
Oh, okay. Hey, Bill, that's great analysis, and we need to do more to explicate what's going on. This is B. Reynolds Reveal. Please rejoin us on the other side of the break when Bill Anderson will hold forth in his entertaining way about the global financial crisis.
All right. Just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you hear to sing? Deep songs of freedom.
Are you over your head in debt and not sure what to do? Did you know there's a way to legally wipe out debt? Stop harassing phone calls, even stop foreclosure or repossession? Well, the answer is yes. Pick up the phone right now and call the bankruptcy hotline at the law offices of Craig Zimmerman. With 17 years' experience as a practicing attorney, Craig knows how to get the creditors off your back and get you peace of mind. Most people don't realize that bankruptcy is a great alternative by immediately stopping collection calls, allowing you to keep your home, eliminate all of your debt, and give you a fresh start. Call now for a free, no-obligation consultation at 800-281-2286 and learn how bankruptcy could help you. So stop wondering what to do with your debt and call us at 800-281-2286. 800-281-2286. Not all will qualify. The law offices of Craig Zimmerman is federally designated as a debt relief agency. Office is located in Dallas and Santa Ana, California.
Ever ask yourself, where do the towers go? Well, if you want the truth, if you can handle the truth, tune in Thursdays and Fridays from 5 till 7 Pacific Coast Time. Dr. Judy Wood is doing a program called ICU PSYOP Recovery Program, addressing your questions, your curiosities, your mysteries regarding that fateful day. So, it's a character-driven production on Guerrilla Media Network, 5 to 7, Thursdays and Friday evenings, Pacific Coast Time. If you can handle the truth, tune in.
Pittman & Davis is a family-owned company that's been in business for over 80 years, specializing in delivery of fresh fruit, smoked meats, cheeses, pastries, and other scrumptious gift food items.
What's more, Pittman & Davis gift food selections are meticulously prepared to assure the finest quality possible and made in small batches to be shipped fresh daily.
Pittman & Davis, fresh fruits and gifts since 1926. Visit the PeteSantilliShow.com/gift right now to see their selections.
For a little ride.
Now you can share the topics that drive the discussions of your favorite talk shows with TalkStream Live topic-driven talk radio.
We gotta talk. Take a drive.
List and promote real-time talk radio topics or post the topics that you want to hear. Hot topics are tweeted and retweeted and include simple click-to-listen audio links. The future of talk radio is topic-driven talk radio.
Now that's what I call real drive.
Available now at TalkStreamLive.com.
You about a revolutionary new product from our sponsor, Elixir Liquid and Electronic Cigarettes. If you're a smoker, traditional cigarettes have lots of chemical carcinogens and are being sold for up to $11 a pack in some places around the country. Electronic cigarettes, on the other hand, consist of only three ingredients and are a fraction of the price of traditional cigarettes. It creates what looks like smoke, but is actually a harmless water vapor while giving you the nicotine your body is craving. Visit our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, at www.futuresmokes.com today. Once you're there, you'll find the hottest electronic cigarettes and accessories and over 100 choices of intensely flavored liquid nicotine. No tar, no carcinogens, and no foul odors. The electronic cigarette truly is the future of smoking. And fans of the Pete Santilli Show get an unconditional satisfaction guarantee and a 10% discount with coupon code REVOLT at checkout. www.futuresmokes.com.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. I am your host, Morgan Reynolds. And the number to call, should you wish to be a part of the show and speak with economist Bill Anderson, is 218-862-9829. 218-862-9829. Bill, let me ask you a question here, prefaced by the following, and that is, we've got a little bit of a Wizard of Oz scenario going on here where people are telling us, don't mind that man behind the curtain, aren't we? Because, you know, Ben Bernanke and the Fed, whoever is running the Fed, wants to keep all this mysterious and secret. So even though fairly simple things are going on, and the trouble is they've kind of lost this mystery, this aura that even Greenspan had. And most people know what's going on, and they're beginning to distrust the currency, the banks. And I'm wondering how long are they going to be able to keep the lid on this? Isn't that some of what's going on here?
Yeah, and here's the thing. But it's not only just keeping the lid on it. It's how much violence are they willing to engage in order to keep this thing going? And I think that they're willing. This particular government is willing to engage in a lot of violence.
Well, they certainly are overseas.
Oh yeah, I mean it's just they can take. Okay, like what we're doing right now, saying,
Let me interrupt, Bill. Hold that thought, because we have a caller on line one. Tom, go ahead.
Hey,
Tom, you have
Reynolds?
A question.
Morgan,
for Bill.
Awesome talking to you. You're my favorite show.
We'll have one Tommy train wreck over. Go. What do you got on your mind,
it's
Tom?
It's always such a history lesson. It's like mind-boggling, you know. And it's really really cool. But I was a trader for 25 years, and I ran a hedge fund. So when I look at like economists are good at like, you know, putting things in writing, but what really happens usually isn't what they predict. And some of the things you see going on in Cyprus now, I mean, if I was to bet, I would make a huge bet that the dollar is going to explode, because now the euro has no reason to stand up. People who have offshore accounts are going to think twice about keeping them offshore. The IRS and the Justice Department is all over everybody with offshore accounts. So it gives the dollar insane amount of support.
Yes. So the dollar benefits by this turmoil in the other currencies. Yes.
And one of the things from like a Keynesian point of view is I never could understand why it's a bad thing to print when we've been doing it since the beginning of time. I mean, Manhattan Island got bought for $25. Now it might be worth $2,000 trillion, and then 200 years from now, it'll be worth $200 million trillion, you follow? So it's just the way things go.
Well, the trouble with inflation, Tom, my point of view is it's real wages, the kind of general prosperity can occur under inflation. That's some of the objection. Bill, do you have some comments, response to Tom?
Yeah, another thing about inflation is that what it does is it distorts the relationships of real assets in the economy. It creates a situation in which some assets become very valuable very quickly, and so it creates a boom in those assets that cannot be sustained. And so, and then you've got to, you know, you've got to liquidate all the bad investments, and that's what, you know, that's created by inflation. Inflation is not neutral. I think that one of the, you know, things, unfortunately, you know, in economics, especially in the macro side, and Morgan, I think you could, you know, both of us have been through this, so I think, you know what I'm going to say, and that is we tend to teach the equation of exchange. It's all different kinds of, you know, I would go MV is equal to PY, and so what you would teach would be a pure quantity of money theory in which all of the adjustments are made instantly, and everybody gets all of the new money at the same time, so therefore all the relative prices increase or decrease relative immediately to each other. In other words, everything stays in perfect harmony. Well, that's not what happens with inflation. You don't have inflation transfers wealth. It transfers wealth from savers, from lower income people, and it transfers it to wealthier people. I mean, it's
those who get it first are especially enhanced, have enhanced wealth. Those who get the first round of spending.
Well, yeah,
if you go back to the gold standard, one reason that the precious metals are so important is gold is such hard rock mining, and it's valuable for non-monetary uses, but it only has been able to increase in supply about 1% per year. It provides an automatically inelastic money supply. You don't want elastic money supply, especially because it can go up dramatically and it can go down dramatically in a currency crisis.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. But what about if the Treasury issued the currency and there was no interest rate, would we still have inflation?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what you're asking is, are you talking about a government set interest rate or an actual rate of interest in the market?
The Treasury issued the currency as per the Constitution and charged whatever minimal cost it needed, but basically no interest rate.
Are you talking about a little bit of seniorage? Okay, would we have inflation there? Anytime you expand the money supply, you are setting a situation in which, number one, prices are going to be higher than they would have been otherwise. And the second situation is that you're going to create distortions in the real economy, and these things are going to come back to bite us later on.
See, the trouble with the Treasury solution instead of the Federal Reserve, kind of a fundamental problem, is the Treasury's currency issue is going to be politically determined.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, the Fed is also political, but at least there's one firewall between them and kind of immediate electoral success. So the temptation, you're still going to have an inflation and therefore the troubles that Bill identifies. You want an inelastic. You can have gold grow, but it can't go up 5, 10, 50% per year, per month. In other words, man has proven through economic history that he is unsound in managing a fiat paper money.
Oh,
politicians, it's just a complete failure.
Yeah,
that's why you need a precious metal base. That's the people's choice historically.
But if the dollar was pegged to gold 1-to-1, let's say, let's throw that number out, right?
Redeemability.
This is like 1900, and you want to build straight out west, out through California. How can you expand the money supply to supply the money to do that if it's just locked 1-to-1 with gold, as opposed to going on a scale?
Tell me, once something is money, and there's a lot of it around, you don't need any more. Actually, what you get is a long-term secular decline in the price of everything. Capitalism is so productive, all the, you know, the savings, investments, science, technology, entrepreneurship, creates more real goods and services. And if the money stock was held constant, that's fine. The benefits of productive capitalism would be spread, you know, almost invisibly through a lower and cheaper and cheaper everything.
Yeah.
Real wages would stay constant, or I mean, the nominal wages would stay constant, but your money would go further. In other words, you don't even Milton Friedman agrees with the following proposition. Any money stock is optimal. It's the changes that are disruptive and destructive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that, Bill?
I do. Now, the other thing about, you know, right now, for example, people like Bernanke, they absolutely fear deflation. What they believe is that inflation is superior to deflation. But with inflation, you get the so-called good effects first, okay, but the bad effects come later. Whereas with deflation, you get the bad effects on the front end, but the good effects later on, because the economy, the real economy, is able to adjust and get back into the proper proportions. Now, that goes all the way back to Say's law, Morgan, you're absolutely right. Any stock of money is optimal. What you do is you allow the prices to adjust to it. But right now, see, we're in a situation where people have the expectation of higher prices. They have the expectation of inflation, and they're making a lot of their investment decisions and personal decisions on that basis. And but I will also say this, we're already in a stage where a lot of us have taken real cuts to our income because of inflation. I'm one of them. You know, we haven't had a raise or any kind of, you know, I think we had a 1.5% raise last year, but over the last several years, we've not had a raise, but the prices that we've had to pay for food and fuel especially have gone up substantially, and so I've taken a real cut in my pay. I mean, you know, since Obama's been president, I have been poorer. You know, and so I have to go outside and hustle bucks just to try to keep up with Mr. Obama's inflation.
Well, Tommy seems to believe that additional pieces of paper, be they digital or literally pieces of paper, are kind of the secret of wealth. Now, Bernanke believes that. And when I was the chief economist there at the Department of Labor for a short term, I couldn't believe how Wall Street and Washington were in perfect harmony. It was all about spending, you know, that spending creates wealth. Spending is financed by new debt. So it's like, okay, they've got a debt crisis. What's the answer to a debt crisis? More debt, right? That's what the Europeans are doing with Cyprus or Greece or Spain. Now, over in Spain, they're wondering what happened. They're going to go investigate in May. They poured 40 billion euros into that now state-run bank. And they're down to zero already. You know, where did it go? So, and you're right, Bill, to go back to one of your original propositions is that, hey, they're not allowing the economy to readjust. They're trying to levitate all these asset prices, be they housing or the stock market. They're injecting money. They're bailing out, literally, you know, saving companies like Government Motors and on down the list. So it's very much, I think the alcohol party hangover metaphor works great, or analogy, right? They want to keep the party going, boozed up, injecting more drugs into
Morgan, is that was what I call the hair of the dog economy. Now, in Arkansas, they can understand that. And hair of the dog economy, that's what we have right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's just Bernanke, and, you know, Bernanke's the guy, you know, giving us the liquor.
And you had an article that used the term zombienomics.
Yeah.
Correct? Yeah. Same idea, right? They're just, you know, keep on electric prodding or blood, you know, you got a terminal patient in hospice, and now they want to do blood transfusions to brighten up the patient. This is not going to, it doesn't establish the fundamentals for a self-sustaining economic growth. I don't care how much cheerleading they do.
No, exactly right. And they'll talk about, well, we've got to build confidence. What you need are real investments. Oh my goodness, there's so much bloated stuff in our economy. You know, we're carrying all sorts of weight that this economy can't carry. But something else that you're talking about, Morgan, it made me think. You were talking about what these economists and, you know, the Wall Street people believed when you were in Washington. What we're being told, okay, is that consumption is productive activity. Okay, and why is it productive? Because it clears the shelves so they can produce more stuff. And, you know, it takes a whole purpose. Consumption is something you and I consume goods because we're fulfilling our needs. Production, you know, consumption is an end of production. Consumption is an end. It's not a means. But the Keynesians
right.
want to see that consumption.
We've got to continue that thought. That's very important, Bill Anderson. Economist Bill Anderson is my guest on the Reynolds Reveal. This is Morgan Reynolds inviting you to return for our final segment. This is a wonderful show. We need to talk political economy. Yes.
Would you like to see who's really hiding behind the green mask of the environmental movement? Are you ready for smart growth and sustainable living? Have you ever heard of Agenda 21? Well, Rosa Corey has, and she wrote a book about it. Agenda 21 is the United Nations blueprint for global domination, and they want to make you their slave. Have you ever wondered what smart growth really is, and just how far the global elite will go to get what they want? Is Agenda 21 already at work in your neighborhood? The answer to all your questions can be found by going to thepetesantillishow.com and clicking on the Agenda 21 tab at the top of the page. Order your copy of Behind the Green Mask, You and Agenda 21 by Rosa Corey on Amazon.com, and you'll support the efforts of the Pete Santilli Show. Behind the Green Mask blows the lid off the New World Order's plan to rid the planet of everything unsustainable. Read the book and then ask yourself, are you sustainable?
Jay's Jerky is the proud sponsor of the Pete Santilli Show. Not only that, Jay's been a loyal listener since we first got
super
started.
Super lean and beefy.
Visit thepetesantillishow.com and click on the Jay's Jerky ad anywhere on the page. You'll find great deals, Jay's weekly and daily specials, and best of all, Jay supports the Pete Santilli Show like no other sponsor.
It's smoking.
Listen live daily to the Pete Santilli Show. You'll never know when he's calling in, but when he does, you can bet he's got an offer you won't be able to pass up.
Superior quality meat.
Jay's Premium Natural Jerky. Wonderful flavors in beef, chicken, turkey, and natural buffalo jerky.
For a mouth-watering organic experience, grab a bag of Jay's Jerky today.
Place your orders today. Hi folks, Pete Santilli here. As a prominent social media personality on Facebook and Twitter since they were first launched, I've participated in one-dimensional discussions with literally hundreds of thousands of followers. When I first set up my SecondLife.com account about a year ago, I entered a whole new magical world that brought my social media activity to life. Second Life is much more than just a 3D game or a social media platform. It'll bring your online persona to life in one of the most beautiful virtual reality simulators on the internet. It's free, and besides, it's the best way to listen to the Pete Santilli Show. You can interact with me live as I broadcast daily from the Overthrow Bunker Studio. To get your free account, go to any one of our episodes and click on the Second Life banner. Once you're in, we'll give you the grand tour of our newly built Camp FEMA, the very first educational tool of its kind anywhere in the world. For a limited time, if you sign up for a new SecondLife.com account, we'll give you a priceless welcome package. SecondLife.com. Join now, tune in, and connect with your friends at the Pete Santilli Show.
Ever ask yourself, where do the towers go? Well, if you want the truth, if you can handle the truth, tune in Thursdays and Fridays from 5 till 7 Pacific Coast Time. Dr. Judy Wood is doing a program called ICU PSYOP Recovery Program, addressing your questions, your curiosities, your mysteries regarding that fateful day. So, it's a character-driven production on Guerrilla Media Network, 5 to 7, Thursdays and Friday evenings, Pacific Coast Time. If you can handle the truth, tune in.
Get your credit repair today at GreatCreditNow.com. We'll help remove bankruptcies, judgments, foreclosures, and late payments from your credit reports.
Great Credit Now was phenomenal. I was able to reestablish my credit. I even bought a brand new car. Thanks, Great Credit Now.
Great Credit Now helps some of our customers lower their interest rates and save money.
Save time and save money. And get approved for the new car or home you want without crazy interest rates or high payments. Call now for your free credit consultation. 800-258-0653.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds. And if you would like to call in, join our caller Tommy on the line. The number is 218-862-9829. And Bill Anderson, economist at Frostburg State University, is our guest. And before the break, Bill, you were mentioning something that I think is stated well by former U.S. Senator and colleague in my Department of Economics at Texas A&M University, Bill Graham, is where I saw it first. He said, consumption precedes production only in the dictionary. You cannot consume what has not been produced. So that's a lie to the emphasis on spending ourselves rich. You can't spend yourself rich on consumption goods and services, right? This was proved up dramatically in an episode of U.S. economic history after World War II. That's what the whole Vedder Galloway book, Out of Work, is, where, once people adjusted and got to work, they had to produce automobiles before anybody could buy them. It's on the supply side. That's what the one way to put the whole Say's Law of Markets wisdom is. The truth is there's way too much emphasis on spending and consumption spending in particular, and government spending. Of course, that is the worst kind of consumption spending that doesn't produce. Bill, what's your reaction?
Oh, I agree. I mean, what these guys have a very mechanistic view of the economy that people are just sort of automons. We're robots, and we're supposed to we consume, and the purpose of consumption is so people can produce more stuff. I heard Israel Kirzner give an example. He said, why do you eat breakfast? So I can go to work. Why do you go to work? So I can eat breakfast. And you end up with this circular reasoning. And, I mean, Keynesianism is based on circular reasoning anyway. I mean, it's, that's probably giving it too much credit. But the, this whole
notion. It's like, I think Henry Hazlitt pointed out in his book, critical of Keynes' masterwork, The General Theory, it's economics of abundance. In other words, it's anti-economic, that we don't need to economize at any particular level because we can just dig holes and fill them up as long as people are paid, that'll get the whole system into a sustainable growth situation. Let me turn to Tommy and see where we're wrong. Tommy.
Yeah, I really want to see what Bill's take was on everything Wall Street creates. Either one, I have my own belief, but let's see what his take is. Either it's created by the absolute lack of controls, or it's intentionally created to put the economy in a situation and the rest of the world in the situation it is now. But which way do you think it happened? Was it intentional, or was it just it just manifested because of all the lack of controls?
Well, I think what happened in with Wall Street was that you have, and it's a term that economists use a lot, we call it moral hazard. And when we, whether we're talking about prosecutors or talking about bankers or anything, people need fences. They need consequences. You know, they need to experience consequences when they make an error, all right? Well, in the situation with the banks, you had the government basically telling these people, hey, keep it, this is great, we love this account, you know, this housing economy, it's just go, and hey, don't worry, if these things turn systematically bad, we'll find a way to prop you up. And then behind that, you had Alan Greenspan first, and then Ben Bernanke talking about the Greenspan-Bernanke put. And what that simply meant was that we've got your back, all right? And so the Fed was promising to backstop bank losses and all these Wall Street losses. You had Congress willing to do it for a mere $800 million or whatever.
$800 billion, and then they re-upped, I believe. Yeah.
Oh yeah, $800. Yeah, it was some incredible amount of money. But the thing that people forget is that when you individuals at one end are getting rich, okay, and they keep coming back to the same well, and they keep making money, and so the temptation is, hey, why should I stop drinking? I feel great. The buzz is great. And so when you got the government and you got the Fed continually, providing the pure grain alcohol, yeah, you're going to have a situation in which people are not – they're going to lose perspective. And I think one of the things that happened in Wall Street – I think people lost perspective. Now, I think, did they purposely run the system in the ground? No. What they believed was that, hey, if I run into trouble, the government will help me out. And
well, if you're big and important enough, yes.
Yeah, exactly. But I think there's another thing, too. And I think sometimes we give these guys more credit than we should. We want to believe that these folks are all brilliant and that they know everything there is to know about the economy. And frankly, a lot of them don't know squatola. They've been, what economics they learned. They learned Keynesian economics. So they didn't even learn any economics, worth learning. Or they learn those micro models that are static and operate on the assumption that it doesn't matter if private enterprise owns, a firm or government owns, because everybody makes the same decisions and all costs are, operate in the same way.
Bill, I want to just change the topic entirely, and I know you've written on this. Penn State's not that far from you geographically. And the Sandusky Paterno administration scandal, and then the Louis Free presence. What can you tell us about that, since it's in your region or neighborhood?
Well, I can tell you this, and I've talked to a lot of Penn State people, all right? And basically, Louis Free had that thing written before he ever did an investigation. There were a lot of people they never bothered to talk to. They knew what they wanted to say. They knew the conclusion they wanted to come to. And Free knew that he wouldn't be challenged. And so, I'll be honest, I cannot, And maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe everybody up there knew that Jerry Sandusky was doing this stuff to boys, and there certainly were rumors of that. I mean, even I had heard of the rumors, and so, but you know, a guy like Joe Paterno was he's an old fashioned sort of person, kind of a what we used to call a square. You know, when we were back in high school 40 years, well, longer than 40 years, oh, gosh, nearly 50 years ago. And so he was kind of a, you know, he was sort of a square guy. And he didn't, who knows? I mean, I don't know what goes through the mind, especially now that he's dead. But I think that in the aftermath, they wanted to make it look like, hey, we've got control here. Well, you know, it's just
but did they do a cover up or an enabling act for 12 years?
I don't know. I think that I don't think that they ever got directly confronted by anybody. And I think that what you had were rumors, and I'm sure that they would say, that somebody probably said, hey, they would approach him and he'd say, look, I'm not doing anything. And these people knew Sandusky for years. He was their friend. And so, you tend to believe him and say, okay, just look, don't put yourself in a position where you're going to look like you're, doing something to little boys. That's, the best I can figure out. But with me, it's just very hard for me to trust anything Louis Free writes because I know his record at the FBI.
You wrote on the butchery at Waco, Louis Free's involvement there. What's the bottom line?
Well, he was not at the FBI. Sessions was at the FBI at the time, but Free came in. And what the FBI did, instead of telling the truth, they covered it up. Now, Morgan, I know that shocks you to think that the FBI might actually cover something, an atrocity up. But, I hate to tell you this, but they actually covered it up.
Yeah, under the direction of Louis Free is what you're saying.
Yes. Oh, exactly. And then, you've got the Kenneth Trenadue murder in 1995, and his brother Jesse – the attorney from Salt Lake City has just been uncovering one thing after another. Jesse was one of these guys that before all this happened, before his brother was murdered by FBI, the FBI agents thought that this guy, his brother, bore a resemblance to John Doe number 2, and they thought that's who he was, and they put him through enhanced investigation.
This is the Reynolds Reveal, and I want to thank from the bottom of my heart economist Bill Anderson at Frostburg State University for being my guest today. It was a wonderful conversation ranging over lots of important issues. Please tune in next week. This is your host, Morgan Reynolds of the Reynolds Reveal. I'm